It's 7:39 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Mike Wood is a public information officer for PPD. Always joins us on Thursdays. Mike, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning. So we had a pretty concerning incident take place downtown on Monday. We had a woman that got shot in the head, right? But we have now had an arrest. Can you tell us what happened here?
Yeah, that was early Monday morning near the intersection of I and Intendencia Street. Shot was fired, and this young lady was struck in the head. And, you know, a lot of times when you hear something like that, it's fatal. But I've seen more than once when a round strikes someone in the head, depending on the angle of the way the shot was fired and or the caliber of the bullet, that can be a survivable injury. And then, fortunately, in this case, it was.
Thank God. Right? I mean, thank God for that. But you guys, as you always do, following up on homicides or attempted homicides, you aggressively go to find the person, and you have now found who you think it was?
Absolutely. Her name was Zaconium Dees. She did turn herself in to us, and the investigators are still, I'm sure they're going to be speaking with her, trying to find a motive and things like that. But, you know, they worked on this ever since it happened. They didn't lay down on it. They didn't put it down. They were on it the whole time, and which is what they do on all these big cases. And they were able to identify a suspect very quickly.
A little bit of an unusual case in that it was a woman who shot a woman, right? That's kind of not something we see much as often as other kinds of crimes, right?
No, but again, I don't know what the motive was or anything like that, if there was any sort of relation or if it was family. I have no idea. So that's something we'll have to get back to.
Okay, so we don't really even know how to categorize this, whether this was part of some kind of retaliation or something related to, you know, other illegal behavior, or whether it was sort of domestic violence or family violence or just a dispute. We just really don't know at this point. Is that right?
Yeah, most of the time on these type situations, the two know each other. It's just there's a lot of different reasons how they know each other.
Gotcha. Also, a fairly high-profile story in the news over the last week was this large amount of jewelry stolen out of a kiosk at the Cordova Mall, right?
Yeah, this individual was, from what I understand, was waiting for a permanent location inside the mall to continue his business, and now it's been hit pretty hard. We're looking for information on suspects on that, and it was a very big incident. It was not a robbery. It was it happened when the kiosk was closed, but the mall was still open. So investigators are on that one as well.
Okay, so technically a burglary then, I suppose, not a robbery because there's no force or second person present. It seems to me, my assumption is that inside the mall there's a number of security cameras. Do we have security footage of the event?
Well, I'm sure that investigators are looking into that. That's okay. Information that I don't have, but we do know that there's cameras throughout the mall in different locations. So I don't. It's an ongoing investigation, and I would be out of line commenting on anything further than that.
Okay, and I assume that if it's useful, if it's the appropriate time based on the investigation to release that to the public, you will gladly do so, as you have done many other times, because that's what lets the people off Facebook see, oh, that's who we're looking for? Okay, I know that person. You know, so I trusted all that in due time. The mayor, I was talking with him yesterday about this, but to me, these community engagement specialists seems like a raging success. Several hundred contacts, you might describe, and then within that, more than 100 or 200 actual services applied for, helping people to get services they didn't know that they needed. This seems like a big good thing.
This is a huge success. And, you know, maybe this is something that can be expanded in the future. I don't know, but the two that we have now, they stay busy, they stay engaged, they're helping a lot of people on a daily basis. They think outside the box, and they're able to do that. They're able to concentrate on this because they're not answering calls for service like officers do. They have to break away and go answer emergency calls, where our specialists here are able to stay with people and listen to them, listen to their story, and find out best how to help them. And, you know, a lot of times they're just needing transportation, funding for transportation to another city where their family is. So things like that are done, and lots of problems are being solved, especially in the downtown area.
It is the model here that they are roaming on their own, that they are always partnered with a cop? Are they, you know, is it a call to service and then they get assigned because it seems like it might fit the situation? What is their daily activity like?
They are in a vehicle, an unmarked car. Of course, they're civilian personnel. They're professional staff, and they are out with they have our radio. They can hear the calls. They can be dispatched to a call, and they do go with officers on occasion, but not all the time. Sometimes the situation calls for just the specialist who are in plain clothes. And, you know, a lot of people are intimidated simply by the uniform, and you don't get as much accomplished as you as these individuals do in plain clothes. So they are able to answer certain calls on their own, and if, of course, if there's a problem, if it escalates, then officers are right around the corner.
Okay, so they are operating on their own, but obviously in close partnership with your police officers if needed, but they're not deputized, they're not sworn officers or anything like that.
That's correct.
All right, very interesting. Mike, I know you're familiar with this story out of Okaloosa County, and I certainly wouldn't ask you to comment on something that involves another law enforcement agency, especially when it's under investigation by FDLE, a challenge that you well know makes it difficult for them to even respond. But you had this airman who winds up getting killed, for Hurlburt Special Operations, a gunner from the AC-130Js, winds up getting killed in his home, legally possessing a firearm. Apparently, maybe, we don't know for sure, but it looks like maybe the police responded or the sheriff's responded to the wrong address. Go in and maybe don't announce themselves, and they think he's a threat because he's got a gun. He's just, you know, defending his home that's getting invaded. My question for you is, when SWAT serves a warrant, especially, you know, which they will do for a high danger type situation or possible high danger, what gets done to make sure that you show up at the right place, that you know who the suspect is, and don't inadvertently harm somebody who's not the right person? Because that seems like with, I don't know, hard to read addresses or non-existent address numbering, or, you know, many people look alike. It can be a problem where you don't identify. It seems like the all of it, I can understand how these mistakes happen. What does PPD do to avoid that?
Well, we check, double check, and triple check the location. In fact, on a search warrant, there will be a physical description of the location, the color, how many stories it is, you know, the color of the roof, the color of the bricks, all kinds of things, photographs. Mm-hmm. To hopefully make sure that something like that does not happen.
Okay. Oh, so not just an address, but a very comprehensive description of the target site.
Yes, and the reason for that, obviously, is to make sure that no mistakes are made as far as incorrect addresses.
And the protocol is you have to announce that it is law enforcement, and you have to give them sufficient time to respond to the door. As I understand the Supreme Court cases, that's the state of the law right now?
Yes, and we're not going to go in there with a bunch of unmarked cars. It's going to be uniformed officers. It's going to be marked vehicles. It's going to be very clear during the announcement over the PA who we are, and it's not going to be just a knock one time and then take the door down. So we're going to make sure everybody inside knows that it's the police, and we'll take it from there.
Very good. We always like to end with a did you know or a cop myth or something like that. Do you have one for me this week?
Yeah, and I saw this on social media, whether one person asking whether it was illegal or not. And this is the practice of riding around with your feet on the dashboard while the vehicle is in motion.
As a driver, not as a passenger. Passengers, that's fine, but you're talking about as a driver, right?
Well, both. I mean, I've seen both. I've seen a driver with a leg hanging out the window before. And, you know, it's just incredibly unwise. If the vehicle you're in is involved in a collision, the airbags may go off, and they go off between 100 and 200 miles an hour, which means in less than a heartbeat, your knee will be placed beyond your head, and it could hit you right in the face. And if that happens, you're looking at a broken pelvis, eye sockets, legs, face fractures, concussions, and this could be the end result of a very minor traffic collision. So it's just a very dangerous thing to do. Kind of like, you know, when I was a kid, we rode around in the back of pickup trucks standing up. You know, the parents were up front, and the kids had no choice. We're riding in the back, and I can't believe that we're all still here.
You know, my dad used to, for a little while, he did drive training at DriveMaster, and that was one of the things he told me. He's like, all right, don't cross your hands when you're turning in an airbag car, because if something happens, all of a sudden you've got, you know, arm and forehead. Basically, to put it very, very delicately, because that's a horrible thing that can happen. And, you know, thinking about that. But OK, so we get that it's unwise and it's dangerous. Is it illegal?
No,
No,
it's not.
Dang it. So you can legally hang your left foot out the window while you're driving. I assume you can't put both feet up. There's got to be a law that says you can't have both feet away from the pedals. Or am I wrong?
Well, I'm not sure how the car's going to move. That's kind of digging deep in the weeds there. But, you know, it's kind of complicated, especially like in the back of a pickup truck. It's legal to do that, but you can't be sitting on a cooler on top of a box or something like that. You must be seated on the floor of the pickup truck. So,
interesting.
Yeah, there's some restrictions here and there, but unfortunately that is legal. It's just not a very smart thing to do.
Yeah, and actually I have just one more follow up. Is yesterday our frivolous topic was where do you go barefoot? When's your line between barefoot and not? And we talked a little bit about driving without your shoes on. And just to make sure that we're all on the same page, driving in Florida without shoes on, driving barefoot in Florida is legal, right?
Yeah, you can do that too. But, you know, and now that you brought that up, it's even more dangerous to drive with like a flip-flop on.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's hard enough to walk in flip-flops, and driving is the same thing. That flip-flop could be hung under the gas pedal or the brake pedal. There's all kinds of things that have gone wrong like that. So it would be safer to drive barefoot than it would be to have some flip-flops or some other sort of shoe like that on.
No, really good point. Good safety tip. Mike Wood is the Public Information Officer for the Pensacola Police Department. As always, Mike, thank you for joining us. Thank you for informing us about the law and what's going on in our city. And we'll talk to you again next week, sir.
Thank you.